the Story Nerds where we're both together in the same room.
Lunch.
It's amazing. It's not going to last long, is it?
Nope. Sadly. So, I'm Jessica Kate.
I'm Hannah Davis.
And today we are talking about our favorite books turned into movies.
Or some of the differences that we think.
Mm-hmm.
One of the two.
Mm-hmm. Now, I thought of this topic because when I was at the ACFW conference, I got a copy of Denise Hunter's A December Bride, which they made into a Hallmark movie, but I haven't watched it yet, so I can't comment. I've read the novella a couple of times. I reread it in
the Hallmark movie stars an Aussie.
It does.
Daniel Lissing. Mm. I might have talked to Joss Whedon a few times.
Yeah. No Aussies actually know who he is because we don't watch Hallmark in Australia. So
well, you need to watch When Calls the Heart and then you'll know all the things why Daniel Lissing
Aussies
is.
Aren't Hallmark people as a nation. But we appreciate what he's doing. Keep it up, mate. So we are talking about other ones where we have actually seen both the movie and the book.
Yeah.
Actually, The Fault in Our Stars is not The Fault in Our Stars. When Calls the Heart is an example of that. Abby, my little sister, who is being our producer today, just tripped over a backpack off camera, and that's why we're laughing. She nearly hit the deck.
But she's a dancer, so she's graceful and got out of it.
She's at the fridge getting M&Ms now, so she's fine.
More M&Ms. Anyway, Jess, go ahead and tell me what's one of your favorite books turned into movies.
One of my favorites. I love this movie. It is called The Duff. It stands for Dumb, Ugly, Fat Friend, which doesn't sound very nice, but it's about it's about rejecting labels. So it's about this girl gets called that, and because the thing of the movie is someone tells her that every friendship group has a Duff, the dumb, ugly, fat friend. And it's basically, you may not be all those things, but it's someone who is noticeably less all there than everyone else in the group. They're less good looking or they're less smart or something. They're obviously the lowest one on the social ladder in the group, and that it affects her very much. But what's funny about the movie is that it is a story about this girl who's basically a total weirdo, and she is next door neighbors with the school, the quarterback of the school team, and he's super popular. And so they make a deal. He's failing science or something, so he makes a deal that she will help him pass if he will teach her how to be cool, and it is quite funny to watch them together. It's really good. It's a plot that's been done before, but the humor in this is fresh. It's really good. It is based on a book. I read the book. It's actually quite different. The book's whole plot, the theme is the same in that it's about rejecting the labels, but most of the plot points are different. But I enjoyed the book. It's a little bit more, I don't know, adult probably than the movie is. Yeah. But the movie is just, it's funny, it's a good time, and it's a modern take on, you know, those teen movies. It's probably a little less cliched than most high school movies have been, and that's what I like
high
about it.
High school musical.
Like in Australia, it was
sad that I'm actually mentioning that because I was way too old for high school musical.
Yeah, I wasn't on the High School Musical train either.
My sister was, that's what I claim. But,
all those high school movies are very, you know, they all talk about the cliques and the jocks and the nerds and the blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if it's a difference between Australia and America, but that's not my high school experience. We didn't have such clearly defined things. It was a lot. People would just.
I think it depends on the school.
Probably a cultural difference too. Australia has less of that.
Yeah, I found that like in the small towns that I lived in, that was definitely more of a thing. Whereas like I ended my time in high school in Bismarck, and it was a larger school. And while like you do have friends from each, like your football friends or whatever, you know, there were people on the football team, and there were like athletic people who were also in choir who were awesome and
Australian
were friendly.
Don't have big school representative sporting teams. You're more going to play for like a town team or something if you play sport or a club.
Interesting.
You're probably like you might have a school team, but it's not a big deal in Australia. So there's less cliques based on those sort of things.
That's
so anyway,
really interesting.
I liked The Duff because it was sort of about moving beyond those kinds of things, and I felt that was more reflective of my experience. So I liked to see that represented a little bit, which was cool. And I feel there's a trend in a lot of the young adult movies coming out now, like Sierra Burgess is a Loser or To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit more evolved than those like really strict stereotypes that were in sort of the John Hughes type movies. So anyway, that's something I enjoy about it.
Yeah, I don't know. To All the Guys I've Loved Before, the main guy who was popular was a track star.
Was he track or he played like lacrosse or something as well? I kind of like that lacrosse. He wasn't a football player.
Wasn't a football
in
player.
Sierra Burgess, he is a football player, but that's barely even mentioned.
Mm.
Yeah, I liked that it was just something different. Yeah.
No, but it's still a sport, though.
Mm, it was still a sport, but just something other than football. It's taken America a long time to make a movie about something that's not football.
There's a reason why football is a part of all of our movies. We should have talked about this on our last podcast.
Yeah. So what's yours, Hannah?
I got to get my notebook up. Here we go. There we go. So out of all the ones that I've read and watched, I had a few that really rung. Lord of the Rings. That is definitely a classic that you need to read. It's a little bit of a harder read. I have to admit that his language...
That's pretty much why I haven't done it.
Oh. I think what I really love about it, though, is his writing style is so unique. But what I love about the writing is he actually made up his own language, which is Elvish.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote, like, limericks and songs that were meant to be sung. So
created,
there's,
like, an entire universe.
He really did.
Like, isn't there that extra book that's just, like, a history textbook of the made-up world?
Pretty much. It's like a...
like an appendix?
Yeah, so. The appendix of the book. And actually, then there's one that's, like, an after... Like, oh, this wow. is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then he created The Hobbit, which is like a prequel mm-hmm. to the Lord of the Rings series, which was so cool. So
The Hobbit is kind of a different discussion because that was not so true to...
Yeah.
I have read The Hobbit, so I can talk about that. I haven't never read Lord of the Rings, but The Hobbit is like this like really skinny book. It's like
it's
less
not
than
very
a
big.
Centimeter thick and or way less than an inch if you're using... weirdo American measuring.
Whatever.
We've been struggling with that all week, trying to convert everything into, like, come
I've
on,
just,
people.
I've
the
just
world
learned...
uses the metric system.
I've just learned that if we're driving somewhere, I can't tell her miles. I have to say,
I'm
like,
pretty good at converting
minutes.
Miles. But yeah, other things like gallons or, yeah, it's hard.
We were talking about gas prices, so we were talking about gas per gallon.
Yes, trying to compare gas prices.
Anyway,
hard.
We're going way off topic now, but yeah. The Hobbit.
The Hobbit. They added a lot. A lot of people complained about the love story. I actually like that. I like that Legolas got a better treatment in The Hobbit because in Lord of the Rings, I felt he was an underutilized character.
Really?
Thoughts?
I guess it never occurred to me. I'm wondering what your arguments might be for that.
Because all the lines he says is like, those mountains are big.
All you're like, going off is the lines?
Yeah, like what he actually says. Anytime he opens his mouth, it's like a super obvious thing that he says. And I didn't notice it until a workmate. I won't repeat the language my workmate used. But basically, the gist of it was, anytime this guy opens his mouth, it's just to point out like something that we can see. And there's no character development really for Legolas except that him and the dwarf kind of get a little banter thing going on, but there's really very little. But he looked like an interesting person. Why wasn't he with the other elves? What's the deal with that? We find out in The Hobbit.
That's true. Yes, we do. We find that out in The Hobbit. And I mean, honestly, I didn't really love The Hobbit as much as I did Lord of the Rings, but there is a lot of like good backstory from The Hobbit that you
I probably
get
like Lord
really,
of the Rings better.
You really understand. But yeah, the Lord of the Rings itself.
Like dies at the end. Sorry if you haven't seen it, but it's been years. Go see it. You should have already.
I think we always, like, if you're going to be listening to us,
we spoil everything.
We
know that.
Yeah. I can't do anything
yes,
about that.
I didn't like the ending, but I enjoyed the first two movies well enough. They
Are you talking about the
Boxing
ending
Day.
Of Lord of the Rings or ending of
The Hobbit? Ending of The Hobbit.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings ending was fine, but the ending of The Hobbit, like, I don't even know what his name was. My sister and I call him the Hot Dwarf. He died, and we were pretty filthy at them for that. So, yeah.
Oh, okay, well, back to Lord of the Rings, though. So the book is it's I remember reading the first one in high school as a requirement, and I really enjoyed it. It was really good. And then I read the second one as part of my high school. Like, we had a requirement in our English class that we had to do so many books of different genres for a book report every quarter. And I remember reading the second one. So if you haven't seen it, The Lord of the Rings is actually broken up into three different books. The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, and The Return of the King. All three of them are...
huge.
They're not that big. I actually read the full three later on in college, and I actually had to read the first one again in college too, which was kind of interesting. So I think I've read the first book of Lord of the Rings three times. But what I absolutely loved about the movie version, though, is there's a the movie version, you can see things differently. Like, for instance, in the book, it talks about how Gollum turns into Sméagol, turns into Gollum. Gollum and Sméagol are the same character, but he's kind of a crazy psycho character.
Yes.
like, he's very, what's he's the gone. Word, the mental illness that I'm thinking of that has...
I don't know that Gollum has a specific mental illness or just all of them at once.
Schizophrenia, oh, yeah, you have like two different personalities. That's
I think that's
what Gollum is like, is he has the two different distinct personalities and they're almost like two different people in a sense, but he's
he kind of does, but at the same time, I think that Sméagol
is like battling
selfish.
Himself. Like,
I think Sméagol is not, people see Sméagol as the good one, but Sméagol decided to become Gollum. Sméagol was bad as well.
Okay.
I think he deceives himself into thinking that he originally was good, but he never was. He's just always been selfish.
Mm.
And now he's become the worst version.
I can see how you could argue that. So anyway, one of the really interesting things is, oh, you know what? It's actually not even Sméagol we're talking about, but I really love the way they play that in the movie is how he's like talking to him and then he's like disappearing and then he's talking to him again, like talking to himself, but it's the same character and they put him in different places. But it's just a creature that comes alive through the visuals that you can see. But one of the coolest moments, and I actually remember, this is a moment that I have to thank Mrs. Rasmussen for. Mrs. Rasmussen was my 10th and 11th grade English teacher. And as we were reading through Lord of the Rings, this was something that she brought up and she actually showed us this clip. And she's like, this is kind of, books are great, but movies actually have kind of a place, which I really loved her saying that as an English teacher.
Mm.
So she showed us the part where at the end of the Fellowship of the Ring, Frodo's uncle, who's the main character of The Hobbit,
Bilbo,
sees the ring on Frodo's chest. Now, something that you have to understand about Lord of the Rings is that this ring is like the, if you imagine like the biggest thing you could ever want, it has magical powers.
Yeah. Everybody wants it.
Everybody wants this magic
crazy.
Ring. It does. It turns you crazy. And it actually, if you learn in The Hobbit, Bilbo kind of turns into a negative character. I don't know.
He starts being affected by the ring.
Yeah, so he's affected by the ring. But one of the really cool parts in the book is that the book says, like, it was a flash of this, like, orc-like character in him. I don't remember the exact words. I'm honestly probably misquoting
it. I thought he did
that
at the start. Well, maybe it was
it's at the end. It's at the end of the Fellowship of the Ring. Yeah, they're in Rivendell.
Yeah, he like attacks Frodo for a second, trying to get the ring.
Well,
back.
He sees the ring and he attacks him, and it was one of those moments that you can really see it much better the way they use the graphics of the movie. That was a moment that you can't necessarily get out of a book, and I think that sometimes action movies do better than the books, because you can see the action a lot better, whereas sometimes the books are much better to go in depth in the character's mind. And that's what
people whinge that, like, one or the other is always better, but the truth is that they're for telling two different things. Books are for showing that internal journey. Mostly, that's what they do best. Whereas movies can't get inside the character's head unless you use voiceover, which I find super annoying.
Yes.
So
most people do.
It's all about visual storytelling. I'm a total screenwriting groupie, and so I've read a lot of books about screenwriting and stuff, and one of the exercises in them is to actually write like a short film that has no dialogue in it, whereas like books you're practicing dialogue so much because it's such a huge thing, but
their
thing is like how to learn the visual language so that you could tell a whole story start to finish and not use any words.
And then
dialogue becomes a part of it, and that's great too, but you have to be able to use that visual language. So
okay, so Jess got to talk about The Duff earlier, but I want to get to Jess's next book.
My next one, I'm going old school, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Whoop, whoop.
I read this because my housemate got it for me for Christmas, and so I read the first book and then watched the movie. All my workmates are guys who are a bit older than me, and they are all massive Hitchhiker's fans. So I wanted to find out what all the fuss was. And I enjoyed the book. It's something I've never read before. It's like this kind of absurdist humor, I guess. Like, it's just this insane world. And it laughs at itself and it laughs at the world so much. Like, it's sort of always cracking jokes at itself and breaking the fourth wall almost, I guess. And it's just this insane story about a guy whose home is about to get bulldozed by the council and he's trying to save it. And then instead the planet gets bulldozed by these aliens who are building like a big space corridor. And but due to the bureaucracy, like after Earth is blown up, he gets off Earth just before it happens. But the whole planet like dies that in the first like scene of the book. And then like due to the bureaucracy, they then don't go ahead with building the highway because the technology becomes outdated. And in fact, Earth should never have been demolished, but it took too long to pass the message on, and so it gets demolished. So he goes on this adventure throughout space with a ship that has an improbability drive. So the faster you go, the more psychotic things happen, and everybody turns into balls of yarn, and then they turn into felt, and then they turn into food, and then they like, yeah, it's weird crap, but it's pretty funny. And then I watched the movie. The movie, I have to say, was perfectly cast. If I made that movie again, I would keep the exact same cast. They had Morgan Freeman, who also plays Bilbo Baggins, incidentally.
Morgan Freeman does not.
Nah, not Morgan Freeman. Who's the little English dude?
Which are you talking about?
Watson. He plays Watson in the BBC one. And he's Tim in the BBC's, or not the BBC, but the English Office.
He plays BBC Watson in the BBC Sherlock.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to... This is stupid. I know his name.
Oh, yes. He does play... That's Smeagol. Not Bill... Oh, no, it is Bilbo.
It's Bilbo.
John
what's
H.
Name?
Oh,
No, that's Watson's name.
I know. Hold on. Played by. Played by.
We're looking it up on the phone.
This is so terrible. Martin Freeman.
I knew it had Freeman in it. M and Freeman. Okay. Martin Freeman is perfectly cast. They have Jess out of New Girl... Zoe Deschanel.
Yes, Zoe Deschanel.
As the crazy chick who goes along with them. I can't remember her name. Trillian or something like that. Perfect cast. Like, they're great for playing weird British people. but tragically, like, this is a movie that happens in space. You need good special effects. It was made in 2005 by the BBC, who are notorious for terrible, terrible production quality.
Yes.
Like, sets, special effects... And it was before we had all this good technology that Marvel invented to make those movies. So it sucks bad. good actors held back by everything else. So I want them to remake it with the same cast. But yeah.
We could have added that to our remakes podcast. Yeah, we should do a remakes one.
So that's my take on Hitchhiker's book and movie.
Awesome. Well, really quick before we wrap up, I'm going to get one more in there, and I'm going to talk a little bit about, let's go for Nicholas Sparks here. Now, I know that I have some opinions on Nicholas Sparks, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who has said opinions on Nicholas Sparks.
I've never read the books, but I've seen a bunch of
the books. Oh, yeah. The books are all very similar, honestly, in stature. Truthfully, the movies
aren't good racket. Well, I changed.
But, I mean, yeah, I'm like, the reality is he's making bank, so why should I? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A Walk to Remember.
Ah, that movie.
Yes.
I didn't know what that movie was the first time I watched it, so I thought it would have a happy ending.
Oh, I feel sorry for you.
I was sad for like 2 weeks.
I at least had the warning of being like, just be prepared to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. It was very sad.
It was
sad.
A good movie, though.
It was also very good book. I remember reading that in high school. The book was, I actually like the book better than the movie. But not by a lot. Honestly, the book... The
movie was good.
Yeah, the movie was very good. Mandy Moore was... It's one of the few movies that I have appreciated from Mandy Moore.
Tangled. She's the voice of Rapunzel.
Well, but yeah, but that's like the voiceover. That's not the actual...
It's good singing.
Anyway.
And she's in License to Wed. That's funny.
Yeah, we could have this discussion anyway. We're getting way off topic and we have a very short amount of time left.
Yeah.
Walk to Remember. I do have to admit that Nicholas Sparks, that was one of his, if not his very first book that he dropped that became popular.
It was also one of the first movies made.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I think it was the first
movie. It was
movie
before The Notebook.
It was
sure.
definitely before yeah. The Notebook.
I feel like we're talking early 2000s, very early 2000s, maybe
2000,
90s. About
2001,
the turn of the century. Yeah.
2002, maybe 2002. Maybe. Yeah. Very, very good book. Very, very good movie. Anyway, the book better than the movie, mostly because it talks a little bit.
Must be good then.
Yeah, it really is. But I appreciated how the story went. That was just one of those like really sweet.
2002.
There it is. It just was very sweet. There wasn't a lot of things in there that shouldn't have been in there. It just was, you know, we talk about those rom-coms, and that was more romance.
There wasn't much
calm. I know. We talk about, like, romance being such a different thing now than it is, than it was then. And that was a romance that was just really sweet, really innocent.
It was.
And
it was
really good.
Sweet.
Had a really good message to it. So I appreciated that a lot.
It was great.
Still had doubts. I mean, being a Christian, I was like, I don't know how much I would be okay with my daughter dating Shane West. Shane West character, but... Anyway, okay, so that brings us to, I think, our last one.
We will do it very quickly. My last one is The Fault in Our Stars. Yep. That is a book I didn't want to read. A friend made me do it, and it was so good. I don't like sad stories normally. This is another Kids with Cancer one, but it was done with a sense of humor and a sense of reality. This was not making heroes out of people who had cancer. It was just showing them at both their best and their worst, and showing that even in the midst of all the tragedy, life goes on, and you still have to decide what you're going to do today, and you still got, you know, stuff to do, and it shows them doing it, and it was really cool. And the movie, I've just never seen a movie that is so exactly the book on screen, and it works both ways. Like, a lot of the dialogue was line for line the book.
Yeah.
And somehow, we were just talking about how the different formats, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, the...
Different formats.
The books are good
things.
For being in their head, and this is a book totally in their heads. And yet, somehow in the movie, it worked. It works. I think there was a little bit of voiceover from Hazel, who was played... by Cheyenne Woodley.
But for
I love
the,
her as an actress.
But for the most part, there wasn't voiceover.
But there wasn't bucket loads, but somehow you totally got everything. So yeah, it was brilliantly done. I've heard interviews with the screenwriters, and they said their pitch to get to write the movie was just, we will change nothing. And they got the job, and they kept their word, and it
was
great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my last one.
Awesome! Well, thanks for joining us on this episode where we are together, and though you can't see it right now, we're together, and it's so much fun!
It's great!
I have to say goodbye to her in like 2 days, and I'm just dreading it,
sad.
So... Anyway.
She has to fly to Australia, people. Join me in our campaign to get Hannah to Australia.
And if you would like to submit payment for funds to help me to get to Australia, I'll make a GoFundMe right now! We were actually just talking about that today. I was like, I need to come visit.
Okay. That's it. It's so cold here. We're like, come to the beach in summer.
In their summer, in our winter, which would be so perfect.
So she can leave Minnesota's snow behind.
Middle of January, I'm coming.
Come to the Gold Coast beach.
Yeah. All right, guys. We will catch you next time on Story Nerds. Thanks for listening.
See you later.
Hey, guys. If you want to continue the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/storynerds and on Twitter at storynerds_chat.
Or you can find us individually. I am on Instagram and Facebook at Jessica Kate Writing and on Twitter at JessicaKate05.
And I am on Instagram and Facebook at Hannah Davis Author and on Twitter at Hannah D Author. Join us next time to tune in and nerd out.
Bye.
Bye.